This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Andres Sartori. How are you, mate?
Hi, Chris.
Excellent. We're just going to touch on one of the wine regions that, when I first got into the wine trade, I went to a guy selling just cheap wine on the corner dairy, you know, nothing fancy. And I said to him, how do you choose your wine suppliers? And he said, the way I do it is I look at the list, and if they've got a Suave that's cheaper than I'm currently selling, I'll stock it. Otherwise, no, not interested. And at the time, I was like, well, that's a ruthless way of doing it. And I think that's one of the problems with Suave is that there is a lot of very neutral, nothing Suaves out there that just get you a bit hammered, really, that are cheap. But Suave, I've had some really nice Classicos in the past. From your point of view, what do you think of Suave?
I think it's a pity that sometimes Suave is basically considered just the table wines. I think there is much more in the area. And I think especially in the last 10, 15 years, the average quality of Suave has grown dramatically. And it's a great bargain for consumer right now because it's still very affordable price. But the quality you deliver, it's actually over-delivering. And Suave is made out of an indigenous varietal called Garganega. I know it's very difficult to pronounce. But Garganega, to me, it's a brilliant varietal which offer versatility and flexibility that is hard to find in a white varietal. And from this very same varietal, you can produce just everyday Suave up to a Classico or up to a Ricciotto di Suave, or sometimes you can find now in the market some sparkling Suave, which are brilliant. So it's a bit of a pity that Suave has not come out from that image, which is a bit damaging in the last years, because there is much more to that.
Yeah. I've had, to be honest, the only Suaves I've had recently have been Classicos, because why bother with the other stuff? They're not, even the Classicos, there is a lot more concentration in the wine, there's a lot more flavor, but it's not an aromatic style, is it? It is a style that is more of a textural wine, I think, when you get to the
high end. It is, but again, I think Classico, it's over-delivering because you can buy Classico in the market to a very affordable price, and you have a lot from the money you're paying. I think it's, again, over-delivering, and it makes a very pleasant wine. In the past, I do totally agree with you guys, it has been a one-dimensional wine, but I think time has changed, and it's much more now.
What sort of flavors would you expect from a Suave, a good quality Suave?
A good quality Suave will be a mixture. You will find some almond and some fruitness. It's not necessarily aromatic, but it's not far from it. So you have apples sometimes. In some of the Classico, you can find a bit of tropical, flavor. So it's a melon sometimes, It depends the way you do the winemaking, but it's a lot to it. It's a lot you can find in a Suave glass.
Yeah, almonds and a little bit of tropical is what I've sort of experienced as well.
Yeah.
One of the things about a lot of Italian white wines is that they often have a little bit of I call it phenolic character. It's almost like a little bit of tannins on the finish. There's a sort of a drying finish. What's going on there? Because you see it in a lot of Italian white wines. For me, if I taste that on the finish, I go Italy. It's almost like a fingerprint of Italian whites.
I think it's all coming from the way we drink wines. Italians don't drink wine without food in principle. Okay, they might have a glass of Prosecco Pinot Grigio for aperitif, but generally speaking, Italians are only drinking wine with food. So the big exercise is to match wine and food, and I think Italian wines are made to match food all the way through. And this is the main reason why you find that particular flavor.
Yeah, I always find, I think about it and I go, a little bit of oiliness in your food or a little bit of sweetness in the food, and that will just come in and freshen
exactly.
it right out.
Exactly, so sometimes what is perceived to be a too high acidity, if you match that very same wine with the right food, you'll be totally happy with it.
Yeah, okay. And Suave, what sort of volume is there coming out of Veneto?
It's a huge appellations. I think it must be around 6,000 hectares as well. So is just a touch smaller than Valpolicella, but is a huge area anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think probably 50 million bottles per year.
Oh, that's still quite a bit, isn't
it?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
And who buys it? What markets? Is it internal or external?
I think Soave also is like 80% exported to different markets. Huge market is UK still.
Yeah.
But even North America, Canadians, Germany, some of the rest of Europe is doing pretty well.
Okay. And if you want a good Soave, you've got to, I think you've got to look for Classico on the label.
It's absolutely,
one of,
yeah.
It's one of those ones where, you know, you can get pretty decent Chianti from some of the sub-regions without going Classico, but a Soave, you've got to be in that Classico.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The grape variety, you said it was Garganega, but there's other grapes allowed.
There is another small percentage. The main varietals except Garganega, other than Garganega, it's Trebbiano Veronese. Yep. Which is a different clone of Trebbiano, which grows in the hills of Soave.
You have to be careful with that Trebbiano.
Yeah.
Every Italian wine is called Trebbiano.
Yeah. That's why I'm specifying is Trebbiano Veronese.
Okay. And I think you'll have some Pinot Grigio in there as well, isn't it?
We do now grow a lot of Pinot Grigio pretty much next to the Soave district because Pinot Grigio has been so successful in the market that many farmers were sometimes switching over to Pinot Grigio.
Are you allowed to blend it, though, with Soave?
We have been trying, and we have been successfully trying to blend a little bit of Garganega into Pinot Grigio, like, you know, 5-10%, and yep. It's very helpful.
Okay. Usually people talk about Soave, the better Soaves are 100% Garganega, but the other varietals are allowed.
I think so. I think it does benefit from a smaller percentage of other varietal.
Okay. And what do you think the future is for Soave?
Soave has a bit to reinvent himself, and I think, to be honest, maybe Soave could be the next Pinot Grigio because he has the platform, he has the critical mass, and I think he has the profile to be a very successful white wine again. We just need to find a way to reintroduce Soave in the market in a totally different way and to become cool like Pinot Grigio has managed.
Okay. Yeah, true. The other region that's sort of on the other side, so if you think about it, you've got going sort of east to west, you've got this hillside, and you've got Soave, you've got Valpolicella, and then right by Lake Garda, you've got Bardolino.
Lake Garda is another wealth of opportunities. We have Bardolino, which is, again, the same varietals we grow in Valpolicella, but they come out with a totally different style because of the soil, because of the weather there. And then you have...
Just tell me about the soils and the weather and how they change the style.
Yeah, the influence of Lake Garda and the structures of the soil is changing the style of Bardolino in a much lighter versions. And it is more, even more Beaujolais-esque style, if you like.
Yeah.
And perfect blend to also make rosé wines. And perfect blend to make also sparkling rosé wine. So I think Bardolino has a lot of opportunities in that direction rather than just staying at the Bardolino itself.
Okay, so at the moment, when I think of Bardolino, I think of it as a sort of cheaper Valpolicella lookalike, not the Amarones, but just straight Valpolicella.
Absolutely. This is the way it's perceived pretty much in the market right now.
Yeah, but it's a lighter style.
It's a lighter style that I think it has a place in the market.
So you're saying go with that lighter style and actually turn it from a red wine into a rosé.
Exactly, and I think that's where they should perceive the opportunity. It matches a lot of great food, and rosé wines are in style now. They are very trendy, so they should jump on the bandwagon of rosé wines.
Is there much rosé made in Bardolino at the moment?
I think they're trying to, but I think at this present time it's still a smaller percentage. I think they could do better.
Okay. And there's one more region there, which, to be honest, I didn't even know about until today. So what's the last region?
Lugana. One of the reasons why...
Lugana
is a lesser known... Actually, there is another wines in the area, which is southwest of Lake Garda, called Custoza, but is a lesser known appellation, which actually sells locally. But what has been very successful for us is an appellation called Lugana, which again is on the west side of Lake Garda. However, the appellation is 40% under Verona province and 60% under Brescia province. So it's an appellation we split with the people from Brescia, from Lombardy. And that's why sometimes people doesn't think necessarily Lugano and Verona together because it's, you know, halfway.
Yeah.
Lugano has been tremendously successful, especially in the German market and in Italy as well. And we think it has opportunity again to be a next one of the next white wine on the market.
Okay, so it's a white wine. What's the grape variety there?
Trebbiano di Lugano. So Trebbiano. The platform is again Trebbiano, but is a lesser productions per hectare. 110 quintals or 11.1 tons per hectare. And it's a very interesting, very aromatic white wine. It's good enough to think, you know, that the Trebbiano di Lugano has a different profile growing in that particular area.
Perfect. All right, then. I know you've got a dash, and I've got a dash as well, so we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Andre.
Thank you, Chris.
Cheers, mate.